Live from the trophy room in the Gator Grapplers Hall of Fame in Bayou-La-Batre, Louisiana. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, inventor, philosopher, first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the longtime legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a man whose only fault is that he loves too much, Richard J. Ringhausen. And welcoming back special guest, well-known song and dance man, the new overseer of the Bridge of Death, and self-taught herpetologist, a man who would always be there for his friends, if he had any, Gregory J. Ringhausen Johnson. And marksman, sculptor, and daredevil, the seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, a man who has an entire wardrobe of alligator skin garments, the youngest of the Ringhausen brothers and star of your show, Alan Ringhausen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The thing
about Daredevil, you know, when you're a kid and you have, you know, like your group of friends in your neighborhood, you know, like.
Guy, knock. Stop. He's all talking.
Right. All right. We love you too.
Share the love.
So, you know, you're a kid. You know, I'm thinking around 8 to 12, somewhere in that range. And, you know, you have your group of friends, and there's always one member of that,
like, Johnson?
Friend group.
What are friends?
Friend group who's the daredevil, yeah, that you can talk him into doing anything. Remember, who was our daredevil?
Larry Clunk.
No, before that.
Oh, Chuck.
Chucky. You can talk Chucky into doing anything. Remember when we talked him into trying to jump his bike over the ditch?
Yeah.
There's this high bank, you know, like.
You know, you
along
made fun
road
of me for laughing at the that movie, Ben-Hur, last episode, but you're about to laugh at Chuck Ringhausen actually injuring himself.
The cycle of death.
Yeah.
We all had Stingray bikes at the time, you know, which were really cool. And you were always building a little wooden ramp and jumping them and,
right,
you know, riding wheelies on them and stuff like that. Anyway, across the street from Chucky's house was the road bank was high. And there was a deep ditch between the high road bank and Tar and Chip Road. And we convinced Chuck that he could jump the. Nobody can jump.
Evil Knievel was a big thing back then.
Evil Knievel was, you know, like a god at the time.
So jumping
stuff was big.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we had Chuck convinced he could jump across. And of course, he could be on pedaling as hard as he can. Comes up to the ditch, front wheel drops off, goes down the ditch, throws him face first out into the road, and just covers his stomach and chest.
Oh, yeah, he didn't have a shirt on.
No shirt. with, like, tar.
And gravel.
And it's, you know, like, embedded in his chest.
That's terrible.
Now, Larry Clunk did a very similar thing, but he was, after that Jan Dean movie came out, Sidewalk Surfing, it was big.
Yeah.
And
You could pull him behind a car on a skateboard.
Yeah, and he was a pretty good skateboarder. He
also probably wasn't sober at the time either, though, right?
Oh, no, he was a kid. You know, it was, you know, like early teens. And they were, Fuzzard Dale was pulling him, driving the car, and Larry Fuzzard was behind. You know, he's probably 14, 15 years old. You know, ski rope behind the car. And he's going through the streets of Fielden, Illinois. And hits a rock, and it throws him forward. Same thing, you know, tar and chip down the chest and stomach. And they convinced him that the only way you're going to get that tar off is with gasoline.
Oh, my goodness.
And I guess you could hear him scream in California
as they slop gasoline on him.
It just took a big cloth, soaked it down, and tried to rub the tar off.
Ah. Okay.
They should have knocked him out first.
Yikes.
So, before we get into alligator wrestling discussion.
Yeah, what are we here for today? You were out shopping.
I was car shopping.
Yes.
So, my daughter, Kristen, who's occasionally on this show, decides she's buying a new car. And by new, I mean used.
Okay, I've got a used car story about her that I'm going to tell if you tell this one.
Okay.
I want to know if it's true or not. So go ahead.
The used car story is that Kristen and I are, well, she's first going around looking at 100 different used cars.
Right.
And once
Rick, you got to pick the best one.
Yeah, I know. In any event, once she narrows it down, then I got the job of going along with her, you know, to because I know about vehicles, uh-huh. a thing or two.
Yeah.
Well, as far as she's concerned.
He knows how to put gas in them.
Or on my friend's oil-covered chest. In any event, so we're going to go look at cars, right? And Kristen has one that she's...
Wait a minute. You've got a friend with an oil-covered chest?
Larry,
and
Larry Clunk.
Where were you when we were telling
the
story?
Well, that was Tarn Chest, but he's making it sound like he's rubbing oil on his friend's chest.
No.
That's a little weird.
No, it was not that at all. Any event.
That's a different story.
So it's Granite City, right?
That was a gladiator story.
Kristen has...
Timmy.
Has located a car in Granite City. And we're going to drive down and look at it. For the listeners in Vietnam, Granite City is an old steel city where they
made of granite.
Like a steel foundry city where half the city's out of work. You know, and it's been that way for 20 or 30 years.
We should get a good deal.
Well, she brings me along because not only do I know a thing or two about automobiles, but I'm also smooth at the art of the deal, right?
Yeah, you're oily.
It's like the Don.
Yeah, I could be president if I was crazier. And any event, so we're going down. She says, okay, it's a white Ford. I don't know what it was, Ranger Tempo or something. It's a white Ford. And it's a little compact car. Said, okay, here's the gig, Kristen. You know, it's listed for, like, say, $9,000. I said, you're not going to pay that.
No, offer him five.
I said, you got to offer him less than that, you know, and you can't act too anxious when you're going up. I will handle negotiation because,
oh boy,
you know, I've been in this line of negotiating for years and years as a prosecutor, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I know a thing or two about it. So we're... Come down the road in Granite City, and you know she's got her MapQuest thing out, and she's directing us where we're going. And finally, we come up on this little trailer or house, mobile home, and it's one of those that looked like it could have been towed behind a house, behind a truck for a while. It's not like a modern modular home; it's an old trailer type home.
Actually has a hitch on it.
Yeah, and this car is sitting in front, you know, and it's the cleanest thing in the property. And when we come up to the house, there's...
Craig, right now I'm thinking stolen.
Right. We go up to the house and pull in there, and the biggest German Shepherd I have ever seen in my entire life bounds out of the house, right?
That can't be good with your bladder issues, Rick.
And it's followed by the biggest pit bull I've ever seen in my life, you know. And an old lady that comes out, and she can barely walk, you know. And
she's got a pit bull now?
And she's got she's wearing a frock coat of some variety, you know, and the hairnet on her head. I'm like, I'll handle this negotiation. Anyway, no, first thing I said is, well, Kristen, you're wanting to buy this car. Get out and go talk to the woman because now there's big dogs.
Big change. Big change.
And Kristen gets out of the car and heads out to talk to the woman with these two dogs, like, just on both sides of her. It was the bravest thing I've ever seen her done ever. So I figured, well, if they're not killing Kristen, they're not going to kill me. So I pop out of the truck to go talk to the woman, you know. Hi, we're interested in your car. She says, I don't think so. I said, well, we're here. I mean, you know, it's been a long drive that we came. I said, can we take it for a drive? She says, no. I said, well, we're not going to buy it if we don't drive it. I said, we have to drive it. And at this point, Kristen kind of tugs me on the arm. She says, Dad, I gave you the wrong address. This isn't the house.
Oh, my goodness.
So as far as this old woman's concerned,
like, you guys are coming to take the steal.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly the way it appeared to her. That here's a couple of people that drove up and are going to take her car.
Right.
Sorry, we've got to go now. And drove up and it was just like two houses down on the left, and here's another car just like it parked in front. Yeah.
So she didn't let you drive it, huh?
We want to drive your car.
Another old lady walks out of that trailer, and while they're standing there, her phone rings, and she says, "What is it, Violet? What do you mean they're trying to steal your car? They're here.
Come get them."
So, what happened?
We didn't buy that car.
You didn't buy the car.
No, she ends up buying another one, you know, after looking at all these cars. And she's driving it the next day. A light flashes on the dash. It says transmission.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
The first day.
First day.
Yeah.
First day.
So she's dealing with that, right?
Yeah. You know what if they look in that transmission, they're going to find sawdust.
Sawdust. I've seen Andy Griffith. I know how that works.
Okay. I had heard a different story about Kristen, and she wasn't buying a car. She was selling a car. This has been, I guess, a couple years ago, a few years ago.
If you say so.
I think it was Dennis may have been repeating the story.
Oh, that it was stored in his garage.
Yeah, and that she went to sell the car, and whoever, you know, the used car lot was, they were looking at it, and the guys, you know, negotiating down the price on her. You know, she was asking, you know, I want $20,000. She said, well, I can't give you that. You know, and starts going around the car saying everything that's wrong with it. And one of the things he says was that, well, like, look at this. The tires are bald. I'm going to have to devalue it because the tires are bald. And Kristen said, well, you're bald. Should you be devalued?
So who did she end up selling it to?
That sounds like your daughter.
My kids are nice. They don't say mean, snotty things.
Yeah, but you do.
He's got a point there.
Hey,
see?
Here. Wait, Johnson, I got a commercial for you.
Commercial?
Oh, my.
Commercial? We'll be right back after this commercial break.
I love that. You should do that every time.
You really should. Today's episode of the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour has been brought to you by Dr. Ferd's Daytona Beach sand-filtered mineral water. Tired of drinking plain old tap water, awash with chlorine, fluoride, and other governmental-sponsored mind-control drugs? Well, take the aluminum foil off of your head and reach for a bottle of Dr. Ferd's Daytona Beach sand-filtered mineral water. Every year, Dr. Ferd makes a drive down to Daytona, Florida, where he fills up the trunk of his car with actual sand shoveled, with actual sand shoveled directly from world-famous Daytona Beach. Once back at his factory, Dr. Ferd takes ordinary tap water, and by filtering it through Daytona sand, it comes out not only purified, but rich with the minerals that only the Atlantic Ocean and the feet of thousands of spring breakers can provide. Dr. Ferd's Daytona Beach sand, filtered mineral water, you'll taste the difference.
Mm.
That sounds good.
Doesn't it?
I think I'll have some of that.
Sand filtered.
And we're back.
We're back live with myself, Allie.
Rick Ringhausen.
Brother Rick. Brother Craig.
Howdy.
Okay, you're going to talk about something that's called the Buzz Aldrin Awards. What are the Buzz Aldrin Awards?
A few months ago, the Americans finally flew around the moon again for the first time, what, 60 years or something?
Okay, when they were talking about that, was it Artemis 2
whatever?
Artemis 2? And they were talking about the Artemis 2 moon mission. I thought they were landing on the moon.
No,
just circled it. It was nothing.
And they weren't even close.
No.
You know, when Apollo circled the moon before they landed on it, orbited it, they were orbiting it like 50, 60 miles above the moon. This was like 8,000 miles away. They really swung out wide. Wait a minute. Well, it got me thinking about Buzz Aldrin, right?
Yeah.
Him and Neil Armstrong land on the moon.
Right.
And there wasn't a firm decision made by NASA as to who was going out first.
Oh, they just said, you guys going up and...
You guys worked that out between you.
You got from here till you get to the moon.
And they, they decided apparently for that. But like in rehearsal, Buzz had made the observation that when they're standing in the lunar module and it's not very big, he said, well, I'm closest to the door, so I'll go out first. And Neil Armstrong, who was higher in rank on this mission than him, said, "You can just step to the side a little bit, and I'll go out first." I was just thinking, you know, you have this visual picture of these two guys shoving it. You know, that's how the military decides things.
Slugging it out in slow motion in outer space.
Yeah. But, you know, everyone knows.
If you punched a guy on the moon, you could knock him like 30
feet. Oh, yeah, he'd like fly backwards. Yeah. So Buzz Aldrin was the second man to walk on the moon, you know.
So famous seconds
like famous
are
seconds.
What we're talking about in the Buzz Aldrin Awards.
The first female astronaut was Sally Ride.
Right.
You've heard of Sally Ride, right?
Right.
Right, right. Well, who's the second one?
I don't know.
I know.
Who's, but who was the school teacher that went up?
That was Christy McCullough.
Who?
Christy McCullough.
Right, and she really was a school teacher.
Yeah. She was.
Yeah, she.
And she wasn't an astronaut.
Yeah. You know, anyway, the second astronaut was Judy Resnick, you know. Yeah. She flew in the shuttle. But then she was sitting in the seat next to Christy McCullough on the Challenger.
Oh, okay.
So she went the way of all things, too. It's the second woman in space not only didn't get the recognition that the first woman got, but she got blown up.
Yeah, but she could have had fame as the first woman to blow up in space. But I think that Christy McCullough got that. She got more attention.
You know, and that was kind of a creepy thing. They had lined up for her to teach, teach from space for some reason, like that was going to be a big thing. And her kids are all like lined up to watch the launch and everything.
Every school kid in America was
pretty much watching it live.
Yeah.
And Alan, let me go tell my Alan story on this. He's sitting with the TV in the background saying, you know, it'd be really cool if this thing blew up.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't say it'd be cool. I said, what if this thing just blew up?
It blew up!
I swear to God.
What is wrong with him?
I wasn't mentally willing it to blow up. I'm just asking the question. What do they do when one
did
blows
you laugh
up?
Maniacally when it did?
No, it had its incident and then went, you know, wise off. I'm like, well, it's not supposed to do that, is it?
That's pretty much what everyone on the ground said.
Pretty much everybody. Then I felt guilty now for the last 30 years.
Okay. You didn't cause it. Chill. All right. First solo flight across the Atlantic. Who is that, Johnson? Do you know who flew across the Atlantic first? By himself?
Lucky Lindy.
Jimmy Stewart.
Lucky Lindy.
You watched that movie?
I did.
Yeah. Huh? You watched it?
Harvey?
Spirit of St. Louis, dude. Oh,
missed that one.
The second person that flew across the Atlantic was Amelia Earhart.
Man.
Are we sure about that? But did she make it the whole way?
Yeah, she did.
I think they have finally found her remains in France.
No, they've not.
Yeah, they have.
In any event,
I was the guy who found them.
You know, in this particular case,
they are for sale.
She was the second, but you still know who Amelia Earhart is.
Oh, everybody knows who Amelia Earhart is. Yeah, she did get notoriety.
Okay, the first husband of Martha Dandridge was Daniel Custis.
I thought we were still talking about airplanes.
No, I'm going down.
You're skipping.
First husband of Martha Dandridge was Daniel Custis. You know who his second one was?
No.
George Washington. He wasn't the first in everything.
I'll be dogged.
I like first in war, first in peace.
So
first
some
in
of these,
the hearts of his fellow countrymen.
What? It's okay to be second, it seems like. Right?
Yes.
George. Well, let's see who we got here.
Okay.
Amelia Earhart, Wilbur Wright, George Washington. Yeah, I'm okay. That's pretty good company.
Oh, talk about the South Pole guy. Do you know the story of the South Pole?
Oh, that was a horrible story.
What do you know about the South Pole, Johnson?
Mr. Popper's Penguins?
No.
Oh.
Roland, there's a race going on to see who's going to be the first person to the North Pole.
South.
And the Norwegians have a team led by Roland Amundsen, and the British have a team led by Robert Falcon Scott.
Didn't Roald Amundsen write children's stories?
Yeah,
that was Roald Dahl.
Yeah. So there's race.
But he's got a famous wife, Roald Dahl. Isn't he married to some famous actress?
Yeah, Sally Field. Any event.
There's not.
They're in a race to
it's
go
to. It's
a
woman from the original Waltons movie.
Michael Learner?
No, the woman from HUD.
Oh, My Christmas Cactus.
That's the one, yeah.
Paul Newman movie?
Yeah.
Patricia Neal.
Patricia Neal. I think she's married to...
Roman Anderson?
No.
This is like a podcast for schizophrenics. Oh, this thing just keeps jumping off.
The Roald Dahl. How do you spell that guy's name? Roald Dahl.
The Chocolate Factory guy.
R-O-A-L-D-D-A-H-O.
He wrote Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Right. Yeah.
All right. But in any event, Roald Dahl, not the author, but the Norwegian explorer, is going to the South Pole. And
it's Roald Amundsen.
And this Scott guy is...
Spouse, Patricia Neal, Roald Dahl.
This,
go ahead.
This Robert Scott is going towards the South Pole from another starting point. And Roland Anderson gets there first and, like, puts up a tent that he leaves, like, a note for Falcon saying, or Scott saying,
been here, done that.
And it's got a letter that says, please deliver this to the King of England or some nonsense like that. So Scott's group finally gets there, and they're having a terrible time of it, right? They finally struggle to the South Pole, only to find that they're second by about three days or something.
Oh no!
And on the hike back, they all die.
All of them,
every one of them. Not Roman Anderson. He went on to write children's books. But
Patricia O'Neill.
But this Scott guy and all the people with him all died. You know, that's pretty heartbreaking. Not only do you come in second, but you die on the way back.
I think if it were me, I'd had a plane come and pick me up on the way back.
Well, that wasn't a thing back then.
Oh, you're going to pull your cell phone out in 1923?
12.
That'd be a good idea.
1912.
1912?
Hell, they could barely fly, let alone fly to the South Pole.
Right.
Okay, how about climbing Mount Everest?
Yeah, you had Sir Edmund Hillary and Norgay Tenzing.
Tenzing Norgay.
Whatever. Okay. In some countries, they pronounce it the other way around.
I've never heard of that guy.
I've heard
of Edmund Hillary.
You've heard Tenzing Norgay.
Once you cross the international dateline, you say names the opposite.
Tenzing Norgay was one of the Sherpas.
Sherpa.
And they make a living dragging people up Mount Everest.
Still do.
In the days. Yeah, they still do. You hire them, and they'll take you up. And this guy, you know, he'd been a hell of a way up Mount Everest before, but he hadn't been to the top. And Sir Edmund Hillary hires him to take him to the top of Mount Everest. And the two of them go up together.
Oh, so that's why he was the second, was because he was Sir Edmund Hillary's Sherpa.
Yeah. That makes sense. My question is...
Sir Edmund Hillary was... Well, he wasn't famous at the time. You know what he did for a living?
Wrote children's books.
No, he was a beekeeper.
Oh. Well, he's more famous for climbing Mount Everest.
I'd say so.
My question, you know, you're getting to the top of Mount Everest, right?
Yeah.
And, you know,
I think it's cold
just
up
a few here. Just a few steps to the top.
Who you push aside?
Right? I mean, heck, that was happening on the moon and the Apollo. I mean, you'd think that there'd be an issue there. And, you know, pretty soon Tenzing Norgay comes down and says, Hillary didn't make it.
Well, right. I think what really happened is
they... close to the top and give them a little push.
They came down, and the newspaper reporter at the bottom only spoke English. He didn't speak Nepalese. So when they're interviewing, Hillary said, well, I was first.
You just had this picture of Norgay going, okay, when we get there, let's just both put our right foot right at the peak at the same time so that we're both doing it at the same time.
Just like when you're choosing sports.
Yeah. And
when
you were a kid, you always put your foot in. All right, everybody put your foot in.
And Sir Edmund Hillary goes, who's the British person here?
Yeah.
Because they owned India at the time, didn't
right.
they?
Right. Was he British or was he a New Zealander?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he was New Zealander.
Mm.
He was still British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Glad we got that.
Sun never sets on the British Empire.
Okay, what else we got here on this second?
Is that why that saying's in place? It's because it was kind of everywhere?
What's that?
Because literally, the British Empire,
they had
Australia,
colonies
and India,
all the way around the world.
I've heard that before, and I never really thought about the reason for it.
They had India at
the time.
I'm
probably 10 times smarter than I was when I started this.
I was going to say, it's under your hat's a brain if you used it once in a while.
That's weird. I had a friend of mine that said, the longer I hang around you guys, the dumber I feel. Okay. Where are we at? First telephone patent.
Oh, yeah. Alexander Graham Bell.
Do you see that movie?
No. is this how you get all your history?
Yeah, the guy who played Alexander Graham Bell in that was Don Ameche.
Yeah.
And there was a big controversy in the movie as to whether or not he was first.
Yeah, because this other guy, Elijah Gray, Both of them bring a patent in on the same day, Valentine's Day in 1876. And the question was, who got there first?
Yeah. And, you know, it's just too ironic that two guys came up with the exact same idea of something totally new on the same day.
Yeah.
Bell won out.
Well, there's a question whether Bell knew some of Gray's innovations. In
he might have sport. Taped a $20 bill to his telephone, too, when he submitted it.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
$20 would have gone a long way.
But I'm just saying, you know,
1876.
Imagine you've invented a telephone, and you get there to say, oh, this guy who got here a couple hours before you says he invented one.
Yeah, it's like something from a Far Side cartoon.
Yeah, like the Bell Telephone Network became one of the biggest corporations in the world. And this other guy's sitting there going, what am I, Pete Best?
You know? Yeah, there was a Far Side cartoon where they were having the scientific invention competition. And there was like a whole room full of interesting inventions. But two guys right in the middle each had a time machine. And one guy's time machine, one professor's time machine had like a regular clock, wall clock, you know, with the hands on it.
Yeah.
And the other guys had a digital clock on it. And like a bunch of young women were all hanging on that professor because he had the digital clock and was way cooler than the guy with the... Anyway, that was
yeah, I could see that.
That was a Far Side cartoon.
You know, I mentioned Pete.
Never mind.
I mentioned Pete Best. The drummer of the Beatles, though, is the one instance where the second guy...
He came out on top, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. Much rather be Ringo Starr than Pete Best. Well, at least, well, in terms of money and fame.
Right.
Not necessarily looks.
I was going to say, Pete Best's a pretty good-looking guy.
Yeah.
They said when he was with the Beatles, he got all the chicks.
Yeah, and there was some discussion. There was some discussion that that's why they got rid of him.
That's how you Paul talk McCartney back in 1961. Like that,
I could talk that way now. My chick's sitting upstairs watching TV.
This shirt you're wearing, is this a Partridge Family promotion?
It's like
or
Woodstock, dude.
Oh, it's a Woodstock.
Even
okay.
Johnson knew that.
Well, it was all wrinkled up because of your rolls.
Okay.
I think scrubbing that out, won't he?
I think it's about time to go, isn't it?
Was that? No, it's not. We got plenty of time to talk about that.
Plenty of time.
Why did you skip over the Wright brothers?
Okay, we'll talk about the Wright brothers. You know, those two guys.
You know, they're famous for what? Flying an airplane, right? But yeah. What did they do as soon as they got done flying their airplane?
Crashed it.
No, they put it away and started selling patents.
No, you're...
defending patents.
Oh, they did a lot of that. But no, this one, they flew it several times that day.
And then they put it in their little garage
They wrecked it. Johnson's right.
And then they put it in their little garage.
You like
and they
hearing
never...
that, didn't you?
Yeah. I don't get to hear that from Rick very much.
You don't get to hear that from anyone very much.
treasure that moment.
But, you know, so that who's the first
Wait
one?
Wait a minute. You're married. How many kids?
Four.
Four kids. You're bottom of the totem pole then, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so Orville Wright was first.
Right.
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 Yes.
Right.
Right. And Wilbur was second.
Right.
Right.
Right. And but Wilbur could have been first. Wilbur got to go first, but then his flight didn't make it. I mean, it didn't take off. So they tried it again, and it was Orville's turn. They were taking turns.
Taking turns, you know, like brothers would.
And finally, Orville's flight took off.
You think Wilbur's got delayed, like for weather, or
he had trouble with TSA, and but then Wilbur flew the very next one. They did it four times that day, and then wrecked it. And put it in a crate, and like you said, never flew again. They built a second one based on their knowledge.
Original model, yeah.
But, you know, think about that. There's never been an airplane before, and these two guys build one, and they're in Ohio flying around like the town of the cornfields. I mean, you know, that's the sort of thing that if you're in a small town, there's never been an airplane in the history of the world, and you see this thing, you're going, wow!
So I know... I can't remember, but Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, wasn't that the place where they flew and
yeah.
Ohio's where they're from?
Yeah.
Or is it the other way?
No, they're from Ohio.
All right.
They were bicycle repairmen in Ohio. They went to Kitty Hawk because it had a steady breeze blowing in off the ocean all the time. They thought they needed that for lift. But once they cracked...
And they were right!
Well, once they cracked the code, they could fly in Ohio, too. And did. Do you know that the first person killed in an airplane was killed in a crash with, like, Wilbur Wright?
Rick's wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
The pilot was actually Orville Wright.
One of Wilbur's one of the Wright brothers' flyers crashed. They were taking some guy up in it and killed him.
First man died in a plane.
Yeah. With one of the Wright brothers. I mean,
one of the Wright brothers.
You know, if you're going to die in a plane wreck, wouldn't you want to die with one of the Wright brothers?
Not really.
The stick?
No.
I can't think of anybody that I want to die in a plane crash with, Rick.
Oh, well.
Maybe Fergie.
That might not be too bad.
I had to do that because that's the only person that I can think that you think of as that you always use her as your, like...
Suzanne Palladino Ringhausen.
Your go-to
that's
fantasy.
If I'm going to die in a plane crash, I want Suzanne strapped in right next to me.
Or Fergie.
Let me out of here! I never liked him anyway!
Now what time is it?
It's time to go.
I think so.
Wait, I've got to make sure we got enough extra time here so you got room to trim stuff out of this episode. Yeah.
There'll definitely be that.
See you later from Rick Gator.
Crocodile.
Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator and Crocodile. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Accept no substitutes. Are you ready? Because there aren't any.